Howdy, folks. Welcome to Lords of Order, at DC's Dr. Fate fan podcast. I'm your host, Ed Moore, and pay attention because there's going to be spoilers. If you need to get in touch, you can tweet me at Teal Productions, T-E-A-L, like the color. Teal Productions and Lords of Order have pages on Facebook. The Dr. Fate fan podcast is the email address for gmail.com, and bigtimenoise.com/Dr. Fate is the website. Now I'm looking at Justice League of America, the 1960 volume, issue 148, cover dated November 1972, on sale August 4th, 1972. This is written for us by Mr. Martin Pascoe, penciled by Dick Dillon, inked by Frank McLaughlin, lettered by Milton Snappin, and colored by Anthony Tolan. The cover comes to us from Mr. Rich Buckler, Jack Abel, and Gaspar Saladino. If you're looking for this issue, you don't have the actual issue in your hands. You can find it in the Crisis on Multiple Earths volume from 2002, issue number 4, in the Justice League of America, The Wedding of the Atom and Jean Loring book from 2020, the Justice League of America, The Bronze Age Omnibus number 3 from 2021, and finally, Crisis on Multiple Earths, number 2 from 2021 as well. Now, the cover is quite the cover. It tells us it's a giant size. It comes in at 30-some pages, I think, 35, something like that. But, man, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 characters on the cover. In the center, because the characters are arrayed in a circle, in the center of the cover, it tells us the Justice League, the Justice Society, and the Legion of Superheroes are going around in circles fighting amongst themselves. And at the bottom of the circle, which is at the bottom of the page, we have Superman fighting Power Girl. And as we're going up the left and going up the right to complete the circle, on the left, Green Lantern of Earth 2 is fighting Superman. Batman is fighting Power Girl. Wildfire on the left is fighting Green Lantern of Earth 2. Lightning Lad is fighting Batman. Green Lantern of Earth 1 on the right is fighting Lightning Lad. The Flash is zooming over and fighting Shadow Lass, who is fighting Green Lantern of Earth 1, to complete the top of the circle. Quite a dynamic cover that you would see on a newsstand in 1977. What's this? If this story is part of the epic anniversary teaming of the Justice League of America and the Justice Society of America, why isn't a single member of either illustrious team in this splash scene? And why is that demon being attacked instead by the Legion of Superheroes? That's what we have on this page, a demon, one of the demon, Abnegazer maybe is one of, is this particular one, is being attacked by Wildfire, Lightning Lad, Ultra Boy. Standing watching is Sunboy, who seems to be laughing, and off to the right-hand side is Saturn Girl, Brainiac 5, and Shadow Lass. Now, a roll call down the right-hand side, left-hand side, the JLA is Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, and Black Canary. The JSA down the right side is Flash, Green Lantern, Hawkman, Power Girl, and Dr. Fate. So, hopefully, all of these characters, the heads in particular, will show up in the issue. The Legion of Superhero characters that I've mentioned obviously have already shown up in the issue because they're on the splash page here. Now, man, for me, the story itself was confusing. I know everybody. I know why they're here. But ultimately what happens is these three demons have been loosed. Let me tell you what the narrator is telling us, and that'll catch kind of the story up. We start from the point of view of Green Arrow and Black Canary, who are trapped by Mordru, if you remember last episode. This is Green Arrow thinking. Never thought it'd end like this with me and the others, when me and the others took on the giant hand that broke into our satellite headquarters, and then dragged us into the future, where we learned that the hand belonged to an astral projection of Mordru, the Legion's nastiest foe. Holding me and the Canary hostage, Mordru sent our friends to succeed where the Legion had failed on a quest for the Green Bell of Uthul, the Red Jar of Kalithos, and the Silver Wheel of Nayarlath, three magical objects that were once in our trophy room. But according to history, were scattered through space when our satellite blew up sometime after the 20th century. After he got them, Mordru used the objects to free three ancient demons whose magic power he wanted. But after they were released from eons of imprisonment, the demons zapped the heroes, doing God knows what with them, and then turned on Mordru too. And so that's where we are here. The demons have the objects of power that they were trapped in, but also that give anyone that wields the objects power over the demons. They're going to destroy these objects, the demons are. That way, they don't have to worry about being controlled by anyone ever again. So they're attempting to do so, and they're immediately being attacked by Wildfire, Lightning Lad, Ultra Kid, or Ultra Lad, Brainiac 5, and Sunboy. But they're all, they have physical powers, of course. The demons are magical beings. A lot of times in comic books, magic seems to trump any amount of physicality that you have. Mr. Mitzi Plitlick and Batmite, notwithstanding, they are continually defeated by people with powers. But typically magic trumps strength. Superman's primary weakness, you would say, is kryptonite, but I would say is magic. So they're attempting to attack the demons. Ultimately, the demons do destroy the objects of power, and they take over those legionnaires, or they ensorcer those legionnaires that were attacking them. Elsewhere, Ultra Lad, Saturn Girl, Star Boy, who was in the previous scene, and I don't know why, and Brainiac 5 are attempting to reunite Mordru's spirit, which is what has been causing all of this to happen, with his physical body. So they're going back to where the Legion, in a story that has yet to be told, has imprisoned the actual body of Mordru in a little trinket that he's wearing on his neck. Is an hourglass, inside of which is trapped Green Arrow and Black Canary. He summoned the JLA and the JSA to do some things, and to even out the teams, he trapped Green Arrow and Black Canary in his in something, and sent everyone else on their missions that way. Well, primarily so that the writer wouldn't have to deal with those characters. Apparently, they didn't want to. But also so that the numbers could be divided up by three better. I don't know why it was done, but it was done. So that's where the Legion, half of the Legionnaires are. Now, what happens is once they are freed of having to worry about being controlled or trapped, these three demons who once ruled Earth together have decided that each wants to do something different. One, and you'll forgive me if I don't throw the names out because I have a very difficult time, like I said, keeping everybody straight. But each of the demons have a name. Abnegazar, Ghast, and Wrath, R-A-T-H, are the three demons. One of the demons is now besotten by what he sees humanity and the Earth has become, and he wants to leave things the way they are because in the 30th century there's peace and whatnot. For those of you that know the setting history of the Legion of Superheroes, the 30th century now, we know that that's not necessarily the case, or there wouldn't be a need for the Legion, but the demon sees on Earth that that's what it is. A second demon wants to use the people of this time where he is, not just Earth, but everywhere, to give him riches. He wants to intimidate them such that they give him everything he wants. They fulfill all of his wishes, which is funny because as a demon who can control magic, can he not like summon up any physical thing that he wants, all the money in the universe, whatever it might be? But no, he wants the people of the era to do that. The third demon wants to strip the Earth of everything that it has now, returning it back to a semblance of what the Earth physically was like when the demons last ruled it. So each of them definitely wants something different for humanity. And so they're no longer agreed, and they decide that they will fight to see whose will is superior. they realize starting off that all three of them are evenly matched physically. So what they decide to do is each take a team of superheroes as their avatars and fight the avatars until there is a winner. So each demon takes one of the Justice League, or I mean the team. One takes the Justice League, one takes the Justice Society, and one takes the Legion of Superheroes minus those four that are trying to take care of Mordru's astral self and body reunification mission. They're already out of the picture, but they'll come back. So now what starts is this round robin-y kind of thing, whereas one demon's people fights the other demon's people for superiority of the earth. And then the third demon's people come in to stop that fight, to cease the fighting, so that the earth will stay the way it is. We'll say that's Abnegazer, I believe, is the demon that wants things to stay the way they are. Let's see. Yes. Yeah, so it's Wrath, who wants people to bring him everything he wants. It's Ghast, who wants to strip the earth back to what it was and enjoy ruling over the earth when it was barren and amoeboid organisms or whatever, way, way, way back before people. And then Abnegazar wants to basically leave everything the way it is, and I guess the demons find something else to do, you know, rather than messing with people. So they choose up their teams, and they sick the teams on different tasks that they want done. There's a couple scenes where the JSA is ensorcelled, using Flash as almost like a metronome to hypnotize the characters after the demon has taken care of Dr. Fate by reducing him simply to a head and mask. He poofs away the body with the arms and legs and everything like that, so that we have the Justice Society standing here in one scene with just Fate's head hovering there. The demon in control of the Justice League uses Green Lantern's ring to ensorcel the JLA. And these two teams are controlled differently. One demon overrides the JLA's controlling demon, overrides the JLA's ability to physically do what they want to do. He takes command of their bodies to where he can make them physically do what they want to do. They maintain their normal consciousness, so they realize that they are doing things that they don't want to do, but they can't stop. The JSA, however, is brainwashed into believing that what they're doing for their demon overlord is in the best interest of everyone. So they willingly do what he asks them to do. And then the Legion of Superheroes, trying to stop both sides, are in essence playing the good guys, trying to stop both sides. We have the JLA and the JSA, in essence, are both the bad guys, and the Legion of Superheroes, the good guys, fighting the good fight, though they are typically, you know, overmatched because they're having to defeat both JLA and JSA members. So we have just pages of fighty fight. There's a page of Wildfire and Batman fighting, Dr. Fate and Hawkman fighting. They're in all of this, for the most part, occurs in the 30th century Earth. So the Legion of Superheroes home time, home era, home city is the main setting. So they're at one point they're outside here, and the several of the JLA and JSA members take over memorial statues of the different legionnaires and animate them and use them to fight for them against primarily the Legion itself. So you have a lot of legionnaires falling to their like statue as their statue is being controlled by someone. The four legionnaires finally are in the vicinity of Mordru's body. Green Lantern of Earth 1 is waiting for them there because he wants to free up Green Arrow and Black Canary so that they can fight for their side because they're undermanned. The JLA have less members than the JSA. So remembering that the Green Arrow and Black Canary were captive with the body of Mordru, Green Lantern of Earth-1 goes to free them, and he frees the little sand glass trinket from the body of Mordru, but then inside, Green Arrow uses one of his arrows to break the hourglass and free Green Arrow and Black Canary, making me wonder immediately why he didn't do this to begin with. So I don't know if they were under some further spell because of the proximity to Mordru's body or what it was, but that's all that had to happen is the little hourglass is tumbling through space from where they've been freed from hanging around Mordru's necklace, and immediately Green Arrow has a bow and an arrow, and he's able to free them. So they get freed, and they help, along with Green Lantern of Earth-1, they help Brainiac 5, Ultra Lad, Saturn Girl, and Sun Boy reunite in captivity the astral body of Mordru with his physical body. So that aspect of the story now is finished. Mordru is once again interred, captive, somewhere. Again, like I said, the Legion of Superheroes has defeated Mordru several times, but this particular instance, we're told, is a time and a place that has not been shown to us in the Legion's book itself, but it has already occurred. So it's a future story we can look forward to, I guess, or what have you, if you're a Legion of Superheroes fan, which actually I am. One of my many reading projects that I try to keep up with is a going through of the Legion of Superheroes. And right now I'm up to their tenure in Action Comics, I believe. I'm about to finish their Action Comics time right before they join Superboy in his book, and a little while before they actually become a name on that title as well. So good stuff reading that Legion. That's one of the many first heroes that I bought that I can remember through time, and it's been fun revisiting those. But and actually, you know, being that this is a Dr. Fate podcast, I'm not running into him very much, but we're going through the story nonetheless. He'll play a part here a little bit further on. We have some fighty fight here as the JLA and the JSA unite here where Mordru is interred, and the two teams together defeat all of the Legion of Superheroes that are here. They're seven or eight members of the Legion, which actually is the most numerous of any of the teams also. Dr. Fate and Green Lantern are swept away by their demon along with the Green Lantern of Earth 2. This is the demon, either Wrath or Ghast, that wants to hold everybody hostage and have them pay him or give him whatever he is asking for in order to release the situation that he has caused. So he is attempting to cause a situation using Green Lantern, Dr. Fate, and, just Green Lantern and Dr. Fate. Wildfire and Princess Projectra come in to try to save the day here, trying to stop them and stop the JSA members now. Green Lantern of Earth-1 appears, as does Power Girl for some reason. I'm not sure. That would be one from each team. I guess one is to bolster what's going on and the other is to, again, try to prevent what's going on. Very confusing as to why people appear other than the writer just wants to use them, right? Ultimately, the Green Lantern of Earth-1 is defeated. We find out that using his power ring, he has set it to open communicate because, again, as I stated, maybe it was just glancing over, but it is an important part of the way that the story is written. The JLA are in control of their minds, but they're not in control of their bodies physically. So Green Lantern, in that his ring is will-powered, he still has some control over the usage of his ring through the free will consciousness that he still has. And he has set it to openly communicate with everyone. So anything that goes on that the ring can see, quote, hear, or hear, is relayed to everyone, whether they realize that it's input or not. They can hear what's going on because of the ring. Because of this, Batman, who is tripping with Superman now to accomplish a task that the two of them have been set on by their demon controller, hear what is going on and realize that Green Lantern flicked his ring to do this. And so they will somehow, when the time comes, they don't really know how at this moment, take advantage of the fact that the ring can communicate with everybody. So Batman and Superman pick up Green Lantern and Black Canary to accomplish their task. We have a little powwow into them figuring out how they are going to defeat, at the very least, their demon, completely free themselves from control, and then go about freeing the JSA and the Legion of Superheroes. But they are still, their bodies still are under the control of this demon. So after they have their little powwow, the demon realizes that physically they're not doing what he told them to do, and he forces them on into the rest of their mission, which is to destroy the ice city somewhere here on Earth. I'm not familiar with the setting. So Batman is carrying a bomb that they're going to use to do that. So they start attacking the city, and the JLA members are likewise attacked by Wildfire and Shadow Lass of the "we want everything to be as it is" contingent. That's what their demon wants. Have many panels of fight here between these two groups. Ultimately showing up is the Flash, who, again, the JSA completely in line and believe what their demon wants them to do. So they are doing everything of their own free will because they have been, let's say, hypnotized into doing that. Hawkman shows up to help the Flash. So we have Hawkman and Flash of Earth 2 here fighting. Everyone is defeated, ultimately, even the Legion of Superheroes. So they're laying here all crumpled. And these two demons, Wrath and Abnegazer, decide that, well, using these pawns isn't working, so we're going to fight directly, which they already did it initially, and it didn't really work out. But they're fighting again in proximity here of Dr. Fate. Let's see, who do we have here? We have Green Lanterns of Earth 1 and 2, Power Girl, and Dr. Fate. They're here with these two demons fighting. These two demons, though, this time they keep it up and keep it up until they just overload each other and they blow up, giving, supercharging Dr. Fate, in essence, because the power that is those two demons now has been freed. And because Dr. Fate was in the vicinity, I suppose he acted like a supernatural sponge and soaked up all of their supernatural ability, supercharging his ability. In doing this, everyone is freed in this vicinity of any demonic control, as is the Legion of Superheroes, because that's who Abnegazer was controlling, although he didn't really need to control them because they agreed willingly with what he wanted to do, and they were doing it of their own free will. The other demon is the one that was controlling the JLA, so their bodies now are freed of control. So the JLA and Legion of Superheroes are completely in control of themselves. Dr. Fate, Power Girl, and Green Lantern of Earth 2 of the JSA are freed of control. That just leaves Hawkman and the Flash, I believe, still under the control of that demon. So our freed group fights off the Flash and Hawkman long enough to defeat that third demon, thus freeing everyone of any control. Ultimately, what they do is hold the demon off. Dr. Fate, being supercharged, reaches out into the ether cosmos all of the 30th century. He brings back the various pieces of the exploded JLA satellite. He reconstructs the satellite and uses the satellite because it once harbored the prison of this demon. Some of that ability to be a prison was transferred to the physical satellite. So rather than having those objects of power, Dr. Fate creates a new object of power, the JLA satellite, where he assembles it and uses that to trap the third demon. So two of the demons have been destroyed now. One still exists, trapped in the satellite. I believe they're still in the 30th century with the Legion. Doesn't tell us. Could be that they are in between times, which is also another location that they did some things in. It's not. No, in order to have pulled the satellite together, it has to be the Legion's era. So that's where this third demon will be trapped forever. Well, till somebody decides to free it, which this occurred in 1977, this story. I didn't look to see if anybody ever freed this demon and used him. That'd be interesting. A little relaying to all of the members here, what went on, how and why. That way we as the readers understand. And so ultimately we have, right before the end of the issue, we have a panel that has, bear with me, Superman, Batman, Black Canary, Green Arrow, Flash of Earth 2, Shadow Lass, Princess Projector, Chameleon Boy, Hawkman, Ultra Lad, Lightning Lad, Dr. Fate, Green Lantern of Earth 2, Power Girl, Green Lantern of Earth 1, and Wildfire, all laid out here. It looks like they're in the Legion meeting room down on the main floor, not because, you know, there's a raised semicircular dais where the individuals will sit and then they will talk to the people who are beneath them, right? Because, yeah, down on the floor there. So they're all gathered on the floor. Everybody says their goodbyes, and with the help of Superman, the JLA and JSA are whisked to their appropriate locales, ending this, the latest team up between the JLA and JSA. The ending was okay. I didn't mind the story itself. The writing was a bit confusing because there were so many moving parts, even for me trying to keep up with them all. The demons, if you could connect the name with the way the demon was drawn, because all three of them were drawn differently, so you could visually tell them apart. If you could link the name with that visuality, if that's a word, then the story was easy to keep up with because you would recognize the demon. And of course, we know the members of the teams fighting for them, whether they be the JLA, JSA, or Legion of Superheroes. And it was easier to keep up with the sides because you were able to team the name of the demon with the visualness. And then when the demon explained what it wanted, the whole of that side came together. And if you could keep up with that, you could keep up with why the superhero teams were doing what they were doing throughout the story. Now, if you lost that or weren't able to make that connection and keep it going, then why, who was doing what, or who was doing what to whom, or, you know, questions of that nature got kind of fuzzy. And so the story lost a little bit of impetus because you didn't understand why. You could see what was going on, but, you know, why is Batman attacking Green Lantern of Earth 2, or, you know, what have you. So a little confusing there, and trying to keep all that straight. Dick Dillon, I thought, and Frank McLaughlin, and actually Anthony Tolan. The three of them did an excellent job of delineating the different superheroes and keeping the coloring together and everything like that, although, you know, we understand the difficulties with 1977 comic book coloring, so coloring was a little patchy in places, but that was easy enough to keep everybody separate, to know who was who, which ultimately allowed you to stay in the story, because again, you're looking at three demons, Mordru, so that's in essence four bad guys, and then 15, over 20 superheroes that you're trying to keep apart. And you know, now that's pretty standard, again, with the JLA-JSA crossovers, so it's not something that doesn't happen. But then throwing in the Legion, if you're not familiar with the Legion, a lot of moving parts. I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was very, then, as far as comic book writing, not at all the way comic books now have been written, which lately has been very much in the Twitter eye. Next time out will be All-Star Comics issue 69, and that'll be the last episode of Lords of Order, also episode 150, but the last episode for this year. So I will talk to you guys when I have read All-Star Comics 69. Ciao.